With the Olympics in full swing in South Korea, I've noticed that people like to discuss not just the sports that are going on, but they also like to discuss the customs and culture of the host nation every time a different nation hosts. And one of the things that I've noticed has showed up in discussions is that people like to discuss the food that Koreans eat. And naturally, when it's food that you don't eat, sometimes it's things that are appealing, and sometimes it's things that people, others from outside that culture, they find a little odd or unusual. And I decided this morning I didn't want to start off by talking about South Korean cuisine. Instead, it got me pondering what others outside of the United States, sometimes when they visit our culture, think about our cuisine. What parts of our cuisine strike others as odd or unusual? So, for example, I'm guessing that just about every tricked up food item that Taco Bell has come up with over the last decade or so would strike people as odd, because it strikes me as odd. I feel a little nauseous just thinking about some of those. Or our tendency to stuff extra food into the crust of our pizza might seem unusual, like the hot dog stuffed crust pizza. Or our habit of adding bacon to everything might seem odd. Or genius, I don't know. Maybe that's appealing. But perhaps nothing is as mind-blowing as what has developed at our state fairs over the last 10 or 20 years. And I'm not just talking about walking around with a large animal carcass in your hand or funnel cakes. I'm talking about our tendency to deep fry everything. Anything you can think of, we deep fry it. So I decided I would just mention a few of the things that I've heard about or read about that strike me as a little unusual or odd. The first one I remember making the news was fried butter. For those who think eating a stick of butter is too healthy, batter it, deep fry it, and then you eat it. You can get fried Fruit Loops. In Minnesota, you can eat fried pig ears. In California, you can have fried Kool-Aid. There is fried ice cream, which sounds delicious, and then they put it on a cheeseburger, and I'm out. In Texas, there's fried salsa. In Texas, there is also fried bubble gum. That does not look good. In Wisconsin, you can get, I'm not making this name up, it's called Fat Elvis on a Stick. It is deep fried and battered peanut butter, chocolate, bacon, and banana. In Oregon, you've got roadkill, which is a dessert. It's no actual animals were hurt in the making of roadkill. In Texas, also, you can get fried picnic on a stick, which is fried chicken and tater tots and pickles, and they're alternated kebab style and then deep fried. In Texas, you can also get deep fried sugar cubes for those who decided to take the fried butter up a notch and just fry some sugar cubes. And in Arizona, those are fried mealworms on candied apples. And there were others I decided not to show you. I did not want to send you over the edge. I'm pretty sure, though, by the end, not only did your disgust level go up, but your cholesterol level also climbed just looking at that. So you may want to ask your doctor if Lipitor is right for you. Now, I point all this out to say that we humans have some unusual taste, and we've developed appetites for things that are not always healthy. And we also have to recognize that many of the appetites that we've developed that are not healthy for us go way beyond the food and the drink that we consume. How many people hunger for power and prestige and prominence? And it leads to all sorts of fights and all sorts of abuse and all sorts of deceit. How many people in our culture are starving for attention? For their 15 minutes of fame, to be noticed. How many people thirst for a fantasy life, lives of perfection, families that are always put together, the kinds of things that are only really possible in movies and in magazines and in glowing Instagram updates by acquaintances, but are not sustainable. How many people crave things that God designed as good and beautiful, like food and drink and sex and material goods, but instead of receiving them rightly, the ways that we consume them is consuming us, and it's tearing us up. These good gifts that God gives us have become distorted. Some of you know C.S. Lewis's classic book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You've read it, or maybe you saw the movie. At one point, one of the children, Edmund, is enticed to eat a dessert that the witch offers. It is Turkish delight. Of course, because this is a magical realm, the dessert has magical properties. Whoever eats it feels an insatiable appetite for more. They cannot get it out of their mind, but unfortunately for the person who eats it, they are never satisfied. They eat and they eat and they eat and they crave and they crave and they crave, but they can never get enough, and they will either run out of the food or they will kill themselves gorging on it. So how many of our appetites have the same properties? They don't ultimately satisfy, and yet we crave them, and we crave them, and we consume them, and we consume them, and they consume us. And so into our world of distorted desires, Jesus has a message. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Or we've already heard in Matthew 5, 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness or justice, for they will be filled. This is one of the reasons we take communion every week as a church, because we remember that there is one person, one offering that can truly sustain us. And at times we take in different ways, like today, because we're leaving room for God to grab our attention, to help us remember this life, the life in Jesus, this is what's vital. We've got to remember as individuals, and we have to remember as families and friends and as a community of faith. We need to hunger for the right sort of things. We need to thirst for the right sort of things. That is the only way we will be satisfied. That is the only way to truly, ultimately be filled. Now, I want to pause for a moment and point out that, as we've seen in every one of these Beatitudes, there's layers of meaning here that's helpful to recognize. I've told you before that Luke describes either this sermon from Jesus or one that is very much like it, and yet the way that the sermon is told and what Jesus says is slightly different, which makes it much more up close and physical and literal. So in Luke 6:21, this is what Jesus says: "Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied." It is a reminder that God is concerned and compassionate toward the literal hungry, those whose conditions leave them living hand to mouth and day to day, those who are food insecure, who are uncertain if their next meal will come today or what's going to happen in a week or more. Mary, Jesus' mother, prophesies about Jesus' coming. And this is what she reminds us about God. He has filled the hungry with good things, but he sent the rich away empty. Psalm 107 celebrates the deliverance of God for his people. "Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever." They were hungry and thirsty, and their lives ebbed away. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. You may remember in Matthew 25, when Jesus is describing separating the sheep and the goats, the righteous from the unrighteous, that part of his reminder is whenever we feed someone who is hungry, whenever we give someone something to drink to someone who is thirsty, it is not just that person in need that we serve. Who is it? It's Jesus himself. He is the one hungry. He is the one thirsty. God identifies with us in the midst of our struggle. The message is clear. The God who saves our soul is concerned about the whole. He cares about the physical needs as well as the spiritual needs. And God is a God who provides. Now, I want us to go back to the way that Matthew describes this. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for, and the Greek word here is dikaiosune. And this is a word that can mean righteousness, and it can also be translated justice. And both of those tell us something important about what Jesus is talking about. To hunger and thirst for righteousness means longing for and working for, among other things, personal righteousness, ethical righteousness, lives that aren't entangled by sin. It means longing to live in right relationship with God and with one another and with ourselves. And Jesus is saying, make righteousness your goal in life, your pursuit, what you hunger and thirst for, and you will be filled. That's been God's goal all along for us, to make us more righteous, to make us more like Jesus. And Paul says, if anyone is in Christ, they are a new creation. Our righteousness is a righteousness that comes from God by faith. God is faithful, and God will see the work complete in us. God is the one who begins to make us right and make us righteous. And we will see progress as we continue to open ourselves to the Spirit working in us and transforming us. We won't be complete until we see Jesus face to face. But even now, the more we open ourselves to what God is doing in us, the more we will be filled. We will be satisfied. We will see these hungers and thirsts filled. But Jesus is also speaking into something bigger. To hunger and thirst for dikaiosune is to hunger and thirst for God's justice. We hunger for justice for ourselves, but also for those who are hungry and thirsty. We hunger for God to make all things right, which is His justice, to make things as they should be, to mend all that's broken in our world, to heal all that is wounded in our world. To hunger and thirst for God's justice means to long for God's total salvation for the world, a salvation that only Jesus can bring. And it also means working on behalf of those who are most vulnerable, who are most vulnerable to injustice, the kind of people, those who've been with us on Wednesday nights as we've talked about this, keep showing up in these lists, like the poor and the widow and the orphan and the foreigner. God's justice is to offer care and compassion and generosity. And so we never stop praying for a new world, for God's kingdom to come and His will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. And this week, as Dr. Westbrook alluded to, we have had another reminder of how much our church and our world needs to hunger and thirst for God's righteousness and God's justice. We had another week with another unconscionable act of mass violence in Florida. And I'll be honest, I am weary. And I am sick. And I'm running out of words. And I am starving for God's righteousness in our world. And I am longing for God's justice that is about making our world right again, finally right again. We need, as a people of faith, a holy hunger and thirst for what's right. And we believe that one day God will quench that thirst. And He will fill that hunger, and we will be satisfied. We will see the renewal of all things. But we need not just prayers for a new world when Christ comes again. We also need a holy hunger that turns us into peacemakers in our violent and hate-filled world. We need a holy hunger that turns us into people of comfort, as brokenness and brokenheartedness is all around us. We need a holy hunger that pushes us outside of the comfort of a room like this to go and join God's work and be agents of God's work, changing lives and changing our community. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for God's righteousness and God's justice, for they will be filled. And when they are, God's justice and righteousness can overflow through them to the hurting world around us.